passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the long and winding Royal Road. My name is W.H. Park, and this is episode 35 of the show. And today we have a special guest, a returning guest, actually, but kind of a new guest in the sense that this is his he's actually now a member of Post Wrestling since the last time he did the show. And joining me from WrestleNomics Radio. And what's the other show called? Pollock and Thurston, Brandon?
Yes, Thurston. That is the branding that has been used. Yes,
the Pollock and Thurston shows. It's the leading shows. If you want to know anything about the business side of professional wrestling, it's Brandon Thurston. Everyone, Brandon, yes. Welcome to the show. Back again.
It's great to be here with you, WH. It's to be reinvited to someplace really means that they want you there. So I appreciate it. And we're here to talk about the greatest wrestling that probably has ever existed. So.
See, this is why you're back on the show, because you agree with me on this point that All Japan Pro Wrestling of the 1990s is the greatest pro wrestling in the history of this great sport that we all love and follow. I think a big novelty for some people might be the fact that we're not going to talk about, you know, spreadsheets or ratings or billion-dollar TV rights deals or anyone with the last name of Khan, unless it was Killer Khan. But he's not in this match, so we're not going to talk about him either.
We are here to talk about the most important TK in the history of wrestling.
This is true. This is also true.
Toshiaki Kawada.
That's right. Dangerous K himself. But we're going to talk about wrestling. And a lot of people might forget that actually Brandon is a big wrestling fan and is actually someone who do you still do wrestling?
No. I'm inactive. I don't use the R word, just like my hero Toshiaki Kawada. You know, it's just I'm running my own ramen shop, basically, in a way of speaking. No, I haven't wrestled since November 2021. I think was the last time I had a match, and I told everybody I'm not accepting bookings anymore.
Okay, well, maybe someone's gonna have to coax you out one of these days to have a match.
You never know, but no plans, because I didn't train in the entire, and in fact, doing a review like this, you know, where I'm actually reviewing content, a match, it, a couple of things, as Nick Khan would say, it makes me have, you know, enhanced respect for people who have to review content, like have to review like WWE shows and AEW shows every week. But secondly, it brings me back to like giving people feedback on their practice matches, you know, that we would have at training. So like I stopped wrestling, I stopped training at the beginning of the pandemic. And then I wrestled again a year and a half later, and the matches were okay, but not to the level that I would want them to be. And I know that there's no space in my life right now to get myself physically to where I would want to be, to where I would be happy with the matches and happy with the output. So I decided I've completely focused on like WrestleNomics stuff in the meantime. So,
well, I mean, you're killing it there. I mean, like, I think, you know, you're the leading voice about wrestling, you know, business, wrestling economics, hence the name of your show. And it's always like for me a treat to hear you talk on your own show when I get a chance to listen, but also like especially when you talk with John on the show that you guys usually do together. So keep it up, keep it up. But I will say, like, I have seen you wrestle on the YouTube gimmick, and I really enjoyed your work. So hopefully one day you'll have maybe like a nice little Terry Funk like retirement run.
Yeah, Daniel Garcia wrestles for me. I tell people who, you know, who I had a hand in training, like they wrestle for me, you know.
Okay. Well, hey, I mean, he's representing you very well. He's one of my favorite parts of AEW wrestling is one Daniel Garcia. But we are not here to talk about American wrestling. We're here to talk about Japanese wrestling, though one of the participants in this match is an American wrestler. Maybe an American wrestler not too many people know too much about. So we're gonna talk a bit about him as well. But Brandon, what match did you pick for us to discuss today?
I picked a match that is not very much like the style of matches that probably you've reviewed up to this point, but Gary Albright versus Toshiaki Kawada from,
that's right.
Am I going to get the date right? October 25th, 1995.
That is correct. Okay. That is correct. It's October 25th, 1995, emanating from Budokan Hall. It is a semi-main event of a big All Japan show at that building. This is from the October Giant Series of 1995. Attendance was listed as 16,300 people. It's a very good gate for All Japan on this
main event. You remember what the main event was for the show?
The main event of the show. I was going to go through the entire card, but the main event is a Triple Crown title match. Mitsuhara Misawa successfully defending against Kenta Kobashi.
Their first Budokan main event must be for those two, I would think.
For them as opponents against one another. Yeah, because they would have been a tag team up until this point because
they're still a tag team because they're going to go to the Real World Tag Final.
Yeah. So this might be, this is where they fight each other for the first time for the Triple Crown.
Towards the end of the tag team run.
Yeah. Because they had the June match with Tawa and Kawada in that everyone thinks is the greatest tag match
and they
of all
would
time.
Have had, we're going to get so sidetracked here, and they would have had that October 15th, 1995 one-hour draw as tag partners against Tawa and Kawada. The second one-hour draw between those two teams in the year, because they also had a one-hour draw in January of that year.
Yeah. So this is why we have Brandon on, everyone. It's like he knows his dates really well here. Like I have to look this stuff up sometimes because I have too many dates in my head. But we're going to talk about this match. It's a really interesting match because like we're talking about Gary Albright. I'm going to go give kind of a short biography on him because not too many people know too much about him. But he came from like he got his break and he made his name in Japan initially for the UWFI, which was a shoot style promotion featuring the likes of Nobuhiko Takada, Kazuo Yamazaki, Kiyoshi Tamura, and people like that. So he comes from that. So it's like really interesting for him to come over to the King's Road style, which is very different from shoot style wrestling. And then how he incorporates that style with Kawada. This is like actually his first singles match in All Japan. He had debuted in the company a couple of months earlier, and he was mainly
wrestling.
This wasn't
his very first match.
No, this wasn't his first match. He was doing a lot of tags with different people.
He's probably on the whole tour, and this is the tour ender.
Yeah, so he's actually like teaming with different people, like different foreign talents, like Stan Hansen and who else would be there? Johnny Ace and people like that and different iterations. I think Giant Baba was testing him out, seeing like who would you be a good fit with? And we'll talk about who he would end up being with, which would be Dr. Dusty Williams. They would become regular tag partners pretty much from the end of 95 through 96 and have success there. But we'll talk about Gary Albright here. But why get back to the original question, Ren, why did you pick this match?
When I was on previously, I think we did the December 6, 1996 Akiyama and Misawa versus Tawa and Kawada tag final, right? And I don't know. I just thought that this would be a really good match that sort of stands out as a crouton, you know, against all the other matches, you know, which are great. It's just a very different style, right? Like it's not Misawa, Kawada, or certainly not, you know, then in the following match, literally that night, there'd be, you know, the first big Budokan main event, Misawa versus Kobashi. This is a very different style and a very different, you know, it's a different wrestler than, you know, the same four or five guys. It's just a very different a look at what's sort of always, I always do think of as a pretty top heavy situation in terms of All Japan in the 90s to get something, a different flavor of wrestling here.
Yeah, for sure. And I think this is something that, you know, Kawada, among all the main level kind of wrestlers in All Japan, he's the one who really pushed for kind of bringing in different styles into the All Japan system. And this is something that got him heat with Giant Baba, and to the point where he's like, Giant Baba had a very strict isolationist policy for the most part in regards to, like, I don't want to work with too many other promotions. People from other promotions did come in to work for him, like Hayabusa and Jinsei Senzaki famously. But he pretty much did not want, like, to mix with other promotions, especially even if he could get, you know, the advantage in terms of booking and have his guys go over like New Japan eventually did with UWFI. But yeah,
and what we're seeing here in the mid 90s is UWFI kind of dissolving, or I guess this UWFI is still existing at this time of this match, right? But according to what I read earlier today, UWFI started their interpromotional relationship with New Japan around this time. This coincides with Gary Albert going over to All Japan, and All Japan would inherit a lot of guys like Takayama, Yoshiro Takayama, Masito Kakihara, who were, you know, very much with UWFI.
Yeah, they would come over eventually a bit later, but yeah, this coincides at kind of the tail end of like the business end of UWFI as its own entity, and then they have to kind of partner up with New Japan to like try to save their business. But in the end, New Japan has all the advantage politically in that relationship. So, you know, but they're smart about it. UWFI famously gets over. Takada wins the IWGP heavyweight title, and then, you know, he holds it for a while till he eventually loses it. And really kind of that, and this, we're getting off topic here, but it really cements Shinya Hashimoto as a megastar in Japan, like more to a higher level than he was ever before, is that match, is the match where he wins the title from Takada.
And you bring up Kawada being public about wanting to work with other wrestlers outside of All Japan. This match really makes me wonder, like, man, imagine like a Kawada versus Takada match.
Oh my God.
Happened ever. Or I don't know. They might have had some interaction in Hustle. I'm off the grid at that point. But,
like, but at their peaks, both those guys would be like kind of like the physical peak of their wrestling careers would be like 95. Yes. Especially for Takada. I mean, by the time Hustles comes along, Takada's kind of washed. He doesn't really want to wrestle.
Did they work together in Hustle, or did they just maybe?
Yeah, because they were, I don't know if they wrestled against one another. Hustle was not really my thing. So I know, like, you know, if you ever watch Hustle, you'll see, like, and you're familiar with Nobuhiko Takada just from UWFI, like, seeing him in Hustle is a complete different thing, because he's basically playing the bad guy from Street Fighter 2 in Hustle.
Generalissimo. Right.
The Generalissimo, smoke a cigar, you know, cackling like a bad comic book villain. And Kawada's kind of at one point like the hero of Hustle. And then he's also doing singing there. He's a very good singer. Very lovely voice on Toshiaki Kawada.
Multi-talented. But, he can make
very
ramen,
multi-talented.
He can sing, he can wrestle.
That's right. He's a very good driver, from what I understand, as well. So there you go.
I see a good driver. How do you know it's a good driver?
He apparently had a collection of cars when he was a top guy in All Japan, and they were all expensive. So I assume he was good at driving them, because, like, you know, he sold most of them to fund his ramen restaurant, from what I read.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. So he had a bunch of Mercedes, and then he said, "Okay, I'm going to open my ramen restaurant. I don't need all these Mercedes. I'm going to sell them all, take the money, open up my little ramen shop just outside of Tokyo." There you go. But let's talk about Gary Albright. Let's talk about this guy. He was someone who came into All Japan in 95. He's not someone you think of straight away when you think about like the foreign talent that worked in All Japan. Of course, the number one would be Stan Hansen, and then probably like Steve Williams, and then Terry Gordy. And then we would go down the list of, like, later on, Vader would come in. Of course, the Funk brothers, both Terry Funk and Dory Funk Jr., and of course, Bruiser Brody, all made their names in All Japan Pro Wrestling. But in this era, I would say the top guys who are being pushed are Steve Williams still, Stan Hansen still, Johnny Ace is coming up as far as like his position in the company goes, teaming with Kobashi, actually, and also famously being Mrs. Baba's favorite wrestler, John Laurinaitis, who... we won't talk too much about him post All Japan. I don't want to really get into that. But Let's talk about Gary Albright. Gary
Albright was the filings on the other show.
That's right. Exactly. Gary Albright was born May 18th, 1963. So he's 32 in 95 during this match with Kawada. He is the son-in-law of Afa of the Wild Samoans. So he is part of the Anoa'i wrestling dynasty.
By marriage, yes.
He was an accomplished amateur wrestler in high school and university. In 1980, he won the Montana State Championship and was a state runner-up in Montana in 81. I think he had a 55-2 record, which is pretty impressive. He then wrestled for the University of Nebraska, which is the N on his singlet that everyone sees, like, that's what it stands for. He's representing his alma mater. He had 58 wins, 4 losses, and 3 draws. He was a Big 8 champion, Big 8 all-academic team, NCAA runner-up, U.S. team member from 1981 to 1984, 1982 National Open Freestyle champion, a 1981 World Greco-Roman Elite champion. And his amateur credentials are pretty impressive. To the point where, like, when he graduates college, he wants to get into professional wrestling. He gets trained by what a hodgepodge. The trio here, Billy Robinson, Danny Hodge, and Luthez, all had a hand in training Gary Albright. What a pedigree this guy had.
I can definitely see Luthez looking at him as, you know, somebody who could handle himself, somebody who could, you know, who is a real wrestler and a real accomplished wrestler. And from reading Hooker, That's what Luthez wanted, and I imagine Danny Hodge and who else?
Billy Robinson. Billy Robinson, yeah.
Yeah. The last hookers, really. All three of them.
Yeah, exactly. And he makes his debut on May 9th, 1988, for Stampede Wrestling, but not in Calgary, in his home state of Montana. They apparently did tours in the United States here and there. In 1988, defeating a wrestler by the name of Jonathan Holliday. He would wrestle for Stampede for 2 years before doing some dates in 1990 for New Japan, WCW, and the NWA. And he had actually kind of a one of those really weird gimmicks. He was Volkan Singh, teaming with Mike Shaw, who is Gamma Singh, who would later become known as Bastion Booger.
Yes.
In the WWF. But so he did that gimmick there.
Or Norman the Lunatic, you may know him as.
Yes, Norman the Lunatic was also Mike Shaw. But that's what Gary Albright's gimmick there. It's funny, like, I was talking with John Pollock about this the other day because we were talking about me recording the show with you. And I was just saying, it's funny if you look at Calgary. It's like, you know, most of their, you know, heels were either like people from India or people from Vietnam. And most of the people that he put in these roles were neither Indian nor Vietnamese.
Yeah, like, did Kawada do like a Vietnamese gimmick when he was?
He might have. Hashimoto definitely did. Okay. And like Hase was Viet Cong Express 2, right, or something like that. So yeah, it's all the brainchild of one Bruce Hart. So that's all we need to say about that. But anyways, with Albright, he in 1991, he goes to Japan. He joins the Union A Professional Wrestling Force International, the UWFI. I gotta say, Brandon, that's one of the greatest professional wrestling promotion names of all time.
I've only recently learned that that's what it stands for. I don't think I ever knew until I was doing some cage match data research, and I was like, oh, that does stand for something. That makes sense. I figured, I don't know, Universal Wrestling Federation or something like that, but no, Union. What is it again?
Union of Professional Wrestling Force International. So it's the closest thing you'll ever get to a union in professional wrestling is probably this promotion.
But like the initialism doesn't even really work out, you know?
It's Japan.
Yeah, okay.
It's Japan. Like there's also, where is it? Most of these don't necessarily work for, you know, some of these like smaller groups, especially the sheet style ones. The acronym doesn't necessarily always fit. But anyways.
Wrestling and romance.
It was actually, first it was a Wrestling Association R, and then Tenryu said Wrestling and Romance, and it's better. There's not too much romanticism with, you know, Yoji Anjo versus Bam Bam Bigelow. That's just me. That's just my opinion. Albright would join here in 1991. He would spend the next 4 years developing an amazing resume of matches against some of the best shoot style wrestlers, like I mentioned before, Kiyoshi Tamura, Masahiro Kakihara, Nobuhiko Takada, and Kazuo Yamazaki. And a lot of these are available to see on YouTube if you do a little bit of searching here and there. I can't recommend highly enough, like, especially the matches with Tamura and Takada. Just fantastic stuff. He was like someone who you would think, okay, he's got this amateur wrestling background and he incorporates like a lot of grappling in his matches in these shoot style fights, but he's actually develops a really nice striking base and uses like elbows and palm strikes and kicks. Not so many kicks, but like he can't use his feet, but he becomes a really well-rounded fighter in UWFI. He becomes well known for his suplexes, his throws, and his grappling. His last match in UWFI is on August 18th, 1995, against Kiyoshi Tamura, and he wrestled his first All-Japan match on October 2nd, 1995, teaming with Johnny Ace and the Patriot against Jun Akiyama, Kenta Kobashi, and Takao Omori. So he's trying to get a spot in Global Energetic and Tough here, you know, that third spot would eventually go to one Kenta Kobashi here. But he becomes Stan Hansen's partner for the 1995 Real World Tag League, finishing with 14 points, and they would win seven of their block matches. And Brandon is back. I was just going over like his start, ending with UWFI, his beginning with All Japan, talking about he was Stan Hansen's partner for the 95 Real World Tag League, Brandon. And yeah. And so we'll just continue. Albright's first single match.
Off here.
Sure, no problem. First single match is against Kawada. This is the match we're going to talk about here at Budokan Hall. And this is, you know, about 3 weeks after his first match in All Japan after leaving UWFI. So, like, he's getting a big spotlight match right away from Giant Baba against one of his top guys in the company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's... The crowd is really hot for him. I don't know if we don't want to jump ahead, but I'm curious to see like what the crowd reaction was for those other matches, because it just, you know, there's some All Japan versus New Japan 2000 vibes in terms of the heat.
Oh, definitely. We'll talk about the heat when we get to the actual match itself. But continuing with Albright, just for the rest of his time in All Japan, he has a match against Mitsuhara Misawa for the Triple Crown on March 2nd, 1996 at Budokan Hall. He does not win the Triple Crown in that match. He enters his first champion carnival, getting 6 wins, which means he got 12 points. He teams with Sabu for the 96 Real World Tag League, getting only 6 points in that tournament. He wins his first World Tag Team title with Stan Hansen on January 24th, 1996 in Nagano, defeating the team of Toshiaki Kawada and Akira Taue. 97... He enters the Champions Carnival. He gets 12 points again, doing, you know, fairly well. Around mid-97, he starts teaming with Dr. Death Steel Williams to form the Triangle of Power, and that's their little symbol. It's like they would do that. That's their group signal, along with the lacrosse. Brandon, are you familiar with the lacrosse?
I forgot about the Triangle of Power. So lacrosse, they went through this phase where they put these guys who I think eventually they would take the masks off of, right? So there's Wolf Hawkfield.
That's, yes.
Right?
Yes.
Is that who lacrosse is?
The lacrosse is, would become Wolf Hawkfield because Giant Baba would get some kind of deal with the creators of Virtual Fighter, which is
okay. So this was a video game character.
This is a video game character.
Okay.
And then finally, when the Exodus happens, he uses his real name, which is Jim Steele.
And George Hines is the Eagle?
The Eagle, yes.
Yes.
And of course, Del Wilkes would be the Patriot. Yes. Though he never takes his mask off. Japan, that's Patriot.
No, only for HBO.
That's right. So he's part of the Triangle of Power 97. I would think this is the peak of his career in All Japan, because him and Steve Williams would win the tag titles from Kobashi and Johnny Ace on July 25th, 1997. And like, this is from this point, like Baba just pushes him and Dr. Death as one of his top tag teams in the company. I think also to give some kind of give Dr. Death, be able to keep him high on the card without having him do too many singles. Because at this point, Dr. Death is his body doing this style for, God, like 6-7 years now. And just, you know, taking tremendous amount of damage, you know, throughout his career in before even working All Japan. But mainly in All Japan. And so, like, you know, teaming with Albright, Albright can be, you know, the workhorse of the team. Dr. Death can come in, do some Dr. Bombs, press slam people and power bomb them and just beat them up a bit, tag out. Gary Albright can get all the heat and stuff like that. And so, like, I think it was a really nice pairing of Albright and Williams. Not of course, not the same level as, like, the Miracle Violence connection of Williams and Terry Gordy, but I think this was a really successful pairing, and they had really good chemistry as a team together.
Yeah, it's Gary Albright is still – we're in that era, even though it is the late 90s, where people who are – he's, like, what, in his early 30s at this point? Yeah. But he looks – you know, if he were walking around today, you'd be like, that guy is, like, no younger than 52. But he's got to be quite a bit younger than Steve Williams at this point. He's probably pushing 40, if not over.
Well, also, I mean, like, John Tenta, Earthquake, was kind of like that. If you look at John Tenta, you'd think, oh, this guy's 45, but he's like, no, he's actually 27. Wow. Yeah. Amazing. In the world, so Williams and Albright would enter the Real World Tag League in 97. They would get 14 points. Albright would form a new Triangle of Power after Dr. Death left to have his very successful run in the WBF. I meant that ironically, by the way.
Do you remember the hand signal for the Triangle of Power? It's like the DDP. People are probably going to mostly hear this and not video. It's like DDP, but no fingers out.
It's this. And then Dr. Death would bring this back with, like, when he would come back to All Japan after his failed run in WCW as well. And he would team with Mike Rotunda to reform the Varsity Club, but they would do the Triangle Power symbol for, I don't know, as a tribute to Albright, maybe.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Dr. Death had to go do Brawl for All. And he wouldn't come back until he went to WCW for a minute, right? And dropped luchadors on their heads and stuff like that, and worked with Ed Ferrara. Yeah,
that's right. And then he come back just in time for Mitsuhara Misawa to take everyone and go to form Pro Wrestling Noah. But Albright's new Triangle Power would be him and two of his former UWFI compatriots in Masahiro Kakihara and Yoshihiro Takayama. So this is just before Takayama would be paired with Takao Mori to form the No Fear tag team. That's right. No Fear. If you play Virtual Pro Wrestling 2, you could do all these taunts in that game for the N64.
Yes. And if you were a tape trader of All Japan Pro Wrestling, you knew what all those WrestleMania 2000 and No Mercy taunts were about.
Exactly. That's right. 98 and 99 would see him really fall down the card as other acts would get bigger pushes. Also, this coincides with the introduction of Vader into the company. He would be coming in to All Japan around this point. And it's oddly enough, like, you know, in Gary Albright's time in UWFI, he was pushed pretty much as the top foreign, not heel, because they really do heels there, but he was pushed as the kind of top foreign guy in UWFI against the likes of Takada and Tamura. But when Vader signed with the company for a brief time, he got pushed down the card. He started getting tag matches and undercard matches. So this guy, I think, prompted him to eventually decide, okay, I'm going to go over to do All Japan Pro Wrestling. But sadly, Gary Albright died on January 7th, 2000 at a World Extreme Wrestling show in Pennsylvania. I believe this is the promotion of his father-in-law, Afa. And his death was listed as a heart attack in the ring. And then it was found out he suffered from diabetes, had an enlarged heart, and blocked coronary arteries. So, you know, man, I wouldn't say he was a huge guy, but he's pretty sizable. Like, so
not talking about somebody who's like in that era where we're starting to see a lot of wrestlers. This is pretty early on in it. We're starting to see a lot of wrestlers around age 40 or just over 40 who are dying. I mean, Gary Albright certainly doesn't look like a guy who's loaded up on steroids, but who knows what contributed to his death.
Yeah. So I know famously they had a tribute show for him. And then, you know, Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, would do like some signing some autographs for charity to help raise money for Albright's family and things like that. So, excuse me. So let's get to the match itself. But before we do that, Brandon, we're going to talk about the card. We're going to go through the card first. And just so, like, if people are searching for this show, like what are the things they might be able to find if they're able to find the entire show on tape somewhere out there. Singles match, Rob Van Dam defeats Kentaro Shiga in 8 minutes, 10 seconds. In a comedy tag team match, Haruka Aigen and Masanobu Fuchi defeat Mitsuo Momoda and Rusher Kimura in 12 minutes, 52 seconds. 6-man tag team match, the Holy Demon Army of Tsuyoshi Kikuchi and Yoshinari Ogawa and Ryukaku Izumida defeat the Super Generation Army trio of Jun Akiyama and Satoru Asako, teaming with Masao Inoue in 11 minutes, 42 seconds. In a tag team match, Abdullah Butcher still kicking around and Giant Kimala defeat Dory Funk Jr. and Mighty Inoue. No relation to Masao Inoue, by the way. 6-man tag team match, Johnny Ace, Johnny Smith, and The Patriot defeat Mike Anthony and the Can-Am Express of Danny Crawford and Doug Furness in 8 minutes and 50 seconds. And our last undercard match, Giant Baba, Jumbo Tsuruta, and Stan Hansen defeat Akira Taue, Takao Mori, and Taman Honda in 16 minutes, 52 seconds. And, of course, our semi-main event is Toshiaki Kawada facing Gary Albright. And Triple Crown title match is our main event, Mitsuhara Misawa taking on Kenta Kobashi and defeating him in 35 minutes, 51 seconds. And I'm just going to mute myself so I clear my throat. Hold on a sec, please.
A measly 4 stars Dave Meltzer gave that first Misawa versus Kobashi match. Just 4 stars. No 7, no 8. Four stars.
Well, I mean, so in I know Dave doesn't think of it as a slang scale anymore. So that means this match is I do. So that means this Misawa to Kobashi match is a 3-star match.
Right. So,
anyways, to him at least, it's a 5-star in my heart. Always will be.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So we get to the match itself, Brandon, and honestly, like you were talking about this before. It's like this crowd, they don't even touch. They just did the ring announcements, right? The ring inductions. This crowd is super hot. And these guys haven't even like touched each other. They haven't locked up nothing.
You'll find this on YouTube. But if you do like a Google search and you use the videos tab to search for this match, you can find a Daily Motion link that has like 10 extra seconds before the entrances, where like Gary Albright gets in the ring and he gets right face to face with Kawada and Super Heat. Because this is like on this stage, I mean, yes, he's been on the tour apparently, but this is, you know, a new wrestler from the outside who's coming in here, and it's super heated. And there's a lot else in this match that's like novel and special.
Well, I also think especially in Tokyo, the Japanese wrestling fans, they might be like, I never feel like there's like a lot of crossover. Like if you're an All Japan fan, you're not necessarily going to be a New Japan fan or, you know, watch UWFI, but you will know who these wrestlers are because you'll read the magazines probably. And so like all the magazines cover all the promotions. So you might even see clips here and there on certain, you know, television stations where you'll see like clips of UWFI. So you'll be familiar with who Gary Albright is. You know that he defeated like guys in the UWFI. You'll know that he was pushed as a big star over there and that he's actually a very talented wrestler. If you see clips like you know that like him hitting you with a German suplex is likely to knock you out. So that's one of his
reading finishers. The Wikipedia page was the perfect setup for this because it talks about how he took out all these guys in UWFI with German suplexes and knocked them out. That was the finish. German suplex knockout.
So he the force of Gary Albright's suplexes, and he was kind of like I said earlier while you were off air there for a second with Brandon, like he was pushed as a suplex machine, like a guy who knew all these different suplexes, and they would come into play in this match, of course. But just immense heat just at the start, because like these fans know who Gary Albright is. They're like they're excited because oh my god, there's a fresh talent. He's getting a push because he's in there with Kawada in a singles match. That's not really too common. It's not like It's not like they, you know, like Johnny Ace got like big matches when he first started in the company. Like he had to work his way from the bottom to the top, right? So this is like Albright, okay, let's see what you can do. Who's the best opponent for you in our company? Toshiaki Kawada, because he has a similar style to what you would have faced back in UWFI among the pillars. So, this is basically a styles clash here. We have UWFI suit style versus All Japan's Royal Road style. And the fans in Budokan, They are here for it, Brandon. They're like so excited. So we get to the match. Both men circle each other before Kawada tries for a low kick, which Albright blocks. Kawada shoots in, which was a big mistake, as Albright takes his back and immediately tries for his devastating German suplex, which
freak out.
Yes. They're like, oh my god, he's gonna beat him in like a minute. We're not gonna get a significantly timed match here or something like that. But don't worry, you know, Kawada escapes and tries for a Pele kick, but Albright avoids that and gets Kawada's back again for another German attempt. Kawada brilliantly gets a single leg takedown and grapevine, but Albright is too close to the ropes. Kawada call breaks out among the fans, and Kawada goes for low kicks and connects. And this sets up his jumping Gamangiri high kick, which rocks the big man from the University of Nebraska. And the crowd is on their feet. I saw one guy like on the opposite side of the hard cam just pumping his fist in the air at this. And then, it's really funny because like you don't like necessarily to see these kinds of reactions outside of the main events of All Japan Budokan shows.
Yeah, we were going over the whole card. You know, if you've only become a fan of wrestling or started to watch wrestling or Japanese wrestling within the last, 10 years or so, we're used to going on New Japan World or going onto the streaming service and seeing the entire card, which is just not a thing that happens in All Japan in the 90s. I don't think like there's no even, G plus TV to see the whole card. I think, and probably by this point, it's 30 minutes. It's a 30-minute TV show where they're just sort of doling out whatever matches they can in that time slot. So, yeah, it's and that's kind of dictating why this is such a top-heavy promotion.
Yeah, so a lot of the times what gets broadcast, and they had to deal with the biggest network in Japan, NTV, Nippon TV. So, but they, over the years, they're the amount of time in the time slot, whittles down to a point where it's like you're saying 30 minutes. So they only have time usually for main events. So I think for this episode, they probably showed, and I won't say exactly how long this match is until we get to the end of it, but they probably showed this match in its entirety, plus like maybe like some clips of some of the other matches, or maybe like, kind of building this match up, they might've showed clips from the tour of Albright using his moves and showing how effective he is with suplexes and the such. So I'm not exactly sure what else was on this episode, but
in the VHS days, were you getting the commercial tapes of these?
I was getting like the clips, and I was getting compilations of like, excuse me, of seventh generation, graded things.
Yeah, no, I remember that the, I don't know if they're doing commercial tapes through VAP, was it VAP, VAP, at this point. They're about to at least, but a lot of those commercial tapes, for whatever reason, they would like be in reverse chronological order. Like the Tour Ender main event would be the first match on the tape. Just to illustrate to the extent to which you were not seeing things in their entirety or even in chronological order.
Yeah, I mean, with commercial tapes, like even back then, they were like super expensive. Like,
especially in Japan, I take it.
Yeah. And then I would go to in Japan, like if you're trying to buy this, collect these things, like you must have been a super fan and had a good paying job or had money, because like these things were not cheap. And I remember I went to Japan. You think this is like the advent of DVDs, the first time I went to Japan, but like they're still selling some VHS stuff. And I'm like, okay, this gotta be cheap, because they might try to get rid of this stuff. So like they're gonna want people are going to want to upgrade to DVD or something like that. No, they're still like $50. If you want like one videotape of like 2 hours or 3 hour, maybe 3 hour runtime, but probably 2 hour runtime. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? 2 hours? You want $50 for that? No.
Well, they knew you were going to, the tape trading industry was out there, and you were going to make your money back many times over through this master tape.
That's right.
Through all the hungry wrestling fans all over the world.
Me and seven other people, that's the seventh generation copies of some of these matches, where the tracking static is clear and present.
And then the person that you sold a copy of the tape to was going to sell it as a copy to tell other people, and then they were going to comp it out, and then and so on and so forth.
Till eventually it went from, I got mine from, like, I don't know, Los Angeles, and then I'm going to get it, and then it's going to get moved to Pennsylvania, and then it's going to move down to like Tijuana, Mexico as a 17th generation eventually. Who knows? But yeah, so from here, Kawada launches a salvo of kicks and knees to Albright's midsection and even lands a high kick to the head. He hits a couple of running boots to the face and then tries for a vertical suplex, but Albright blocks it until Kawada is finally able to get him up and over with a suplex. Kawada tries to finish him off with a backdrop driver, but Albright switches around to Kawada's back and takes him down with a single leg into a beautiful transition into, I guess this is basically a knee bar from behind Kawada's back. Albright then transitions into a knee bar or heel hook, but Kawada is able to roll to the ropes. And this is all like, you know, there's all like, there's not even 10 minutes has gone in this match. And this so much has happened already, you know, like, which is kind of a departure for like most All Japan matches, because they're not necessarily structured like this fast paced right out of the gate.
And it's very submission based, yeah, which I would say is contrasting with like New Japan style or something like that. All Japan, I know we got the stretch plum with Kawada and you got the face lock with, Misawa, but there's not a lot of certainly not a lot of submission finishes. And this is a very ground-based, submission-based match. I mean, in large part because it's Gary Albright coming from UWFI, and this is, would you agree, this is more so a UWFI style match than it is an All Japan style match, considering the wrestlers who are involved. And it's, you know, people are going crazy over just these like leg bars that they're doing. Is that the Achilles tendon hold, and arm bars later too?
Yeah. So they go for a lot of like limb submissions, basically primarily around the legs and the arms. Albright tries for another leg submission, but Kawada kicks him off. Kawada kicks are done to the face of Albright, and another volley of shots to the body, and Kawada tries for another jumping gamangiri, but Albright blocks it and then takes Kawada over with a belly-to-belly suplex that he transitions into an armbar. Beautiful transition, but Kawada gets his foot on the ropes. And I think one of the things that I think it's such a different departure. It is a departure, and these fans are not used to seeing this, but they were like, oh my God, there's a new exciting element that's coming into our favorite promotion, and we're seeing it unfold right here with, you know, with Gary Albright using all these kinds of moves against Kawada, and Kawada's, you know, keeping up with him for the most part. And so, like, I think for them, they were like, the fans, I mean, they were like, they wanted, you know, a little bit of, you know, like freshness injected into something they had been used to seeing for like the last 5 years. Not that, you know, Royal Road was getting stale or anything like that, but it's like, oh my God, this is something entirely different from what we're used to seeing, and it's exciting. And so, like, oh my God, what's the future hold for what we're gonna see, you know, in the next several years if this continues?
Yeah, I was watching, you know, going into this point and kind of recognizing how wrestling matches, and this one being a good case of it, where wrestling matches and how good they are or how over they get have something to do with what happens bell to bell or that night. But a lot of it has to do with the environment that's built, you know, organically for months and years in advance. And if Gary Albright had never wrestled in Japan before this point, if the audience had no reason to be aware of who he was, this match would not have been as over as it was, and not just because they perceive Gary Albright as an established star from UWFI, but because of the style that was established that he was, you know, associated with, in terms of the German is super over and the submissions are super over, and nobody's hitting the ropes, by the way, in this match.
No, it's it. No, this is true.
But it's
like also entire, like,
go ahead.
Oh, to your point, like, I also think, like, with Albright, if he never wrestled in Japan before, if he didn't do four or five years in UWFI, like, he just came cold, he wouldn't get this position against Kawada, especially and in the semi-main event slot of a Budokan Hall show with 16,000 fans. That would have been like, okay, let's just put him in a singles match against Kawada, you know, you know, fifth from the top or fourth from the top. You know, that's what he would have gotten. But he, like you said, he did establish himself. People were familiar with him. And like, he had spent 5 years establishing all these like deadly moves of his, with his suplexes and submissions in, and like his striking, like he does like kind of like some Muay Thai clinching knees and stuff like that in this match as well, which we'll get to. So Albright goes for another armbar, but Kawada blocks it. So Albright hits him with a snap suplex and goes for the arm again, but Kawada rolls through that and goes for grapevining Albright's head with his legs, but Albright gets out easily. Again, this is a lot of like multiple switches and transitions out of submissions, which you don't necessarily see all the time in heavyweight matches in Japan, especially in All Japan at this time. But these guys are just smooth transitions, like getting out of submissions, not being letting their opponents lock anything super tight at this time in the match.
Yeah. It's especially guys who are bigger. I've always tried to think about like, well, is All Japan Pro Wrestling, is that style, is it really a technical style? I guess it's not. And what you see here is an example to the contrary of that.
Yeah, this is like you say, this is not a technical style promotion. It's more of a wearing you down type of, you know, style, I feel. And then start hitting bombs like at the end of the match if you're in the main event. But this is very much like something I think Kawada was just like dying to do. Like he wanted to do like more of a kind of a technical wrestling style match and be able to show up like, hey, I know my striking, I know my, you know, my submissions, like let me try to use these things more in this match. Kawada goes back to low kicks, which gets Albright down, and then he goes for a single leg crab, but Albright won't turn over. So, you know, Kawada decides to launch some downward kicks to Albright's face. And then he goes for a heel hook of his own, but Albright gets up and starts raining down Shotai palm strikes to Kawada's face. So it's really intensifying here, transitioning more from like using submission holds to like, okay, now I'm going to try to hurt you with like hitting you in the face with like my strikes here.
For sure. Yeah.
And already, I'm already thinking this match is awesome, Brandon, because it's I think we just hit the 10-minute mark of this match. It's like, oh my god, this thing's like got so much packed into it. Excuse me. Albright tries to take a dangerous K's back, but he's able to roll out and just start raining down punches to Albright and goes for another armbar, but Albright gets to the ropes and escapes to the floor. Kawada follows him out and Albright hits him with a shoulder tackle. Kawada retaliates with kicks to the arm, but a legendary referee Joe Higuchi is able to send Kawada back to the ring and then tells Gary, come on Gary, get back in the ring, we got a match in here, let's get back in there.
We see a young Monkey and Moss man on the floor here. Earlier days, Jun Akiyama also attending the ring.
Oh, I love watching like who's outside. Oh, there's a Murashima. There's Marufuji. Later on, we'll get, oh, there's Kenta. There's Kanemaru, like being ring attendants and stuff like that. But yeah, it's always fun to see who's out there. Like I think Takao Mori is still a young boy at this point, and he's out there as a ring attendant and stuff like that. Let's see. Albright comes in where Kawada is waiting for him. Kawada tries for a body slam on Albright, but needs to soften up with some stiff forearms to the face before finally getting him up and down, much to the delight of the fans in Budokan Hall. This really really popped them, Brandon. This body slam, but it means so much.
He did something very similar. I think he called it a suplex. I guess it was more of an overhead, and this was more of a traditional body slam. And this was a bit more realistic. I like that they're going for, you know, to work for these holds. The one earlier in the match looks pretty cooperative, but this was much more realistic.
Yeah, it had more struggle to it, definitely. There's a stiff kick to the back of Albright, which only pisses him off. He shrugs off Kawada's strikes as he's getting up and hits a headbutt and some elbows to the face before taking Kawada down with another belly-to-belly suplex. He follows up with a power slam into a cover. It gets a two count on Kawada here. Albright then hits a German suplex that sends Kawada to another dimension. But Kawada gets up, or does he? No, Kawada actually staggers towards the ropes where he falls to the outside with like, and just the expression on his face, the sell job Kawada does off this suplex is unbelievable. Just amazing selling from from a master of this particular part of wrestling.
And you see, this is a very, very distinct Kawada self, I would say, that many people, probably including myself, have imitated. But he does it, and there's a lot of other things like this in this match. He does it in a way that I think a lot of people who imitate this kind of sell, or okay, it's this big German, which is this really established move. He pops right up, but he's out on his feet, basically. And as if there's a part of his mind and body that are trying to stay in it, and another part that are that's just knocked out and vacant. And this, you know, leads to him spilling through the ropes to the floor. A lot of other people would try to perform this. It comes off cartoony, you know. You come off like a cartoon with the birds, you know, rotating around your head or whatever.
Right.
But you know, things in All Japan, to my view, in the 90s they're understated enough that they immerse me rather than try to stand out to such an extent that it becomes cartoony and it sort of takes me out of the immersion.
Although I think with Kawada, he's very strategic about when he does this kind of selling. Like, he doesn't do it throughout the entirety of his match with anyone. Yeah, he doesn't even do it for this sell. No, but he doesn't even do it for like every match he does. Like he saves it for like certain where he thinks this is like going to get. And really, if you think about it, this match is really, you know, designed to get as much, you know, heat on Albright to try to elevate him. Like Kawada's not trying to sandbag this dude. Kawada's like out there. I'm gonna sell for this guy. I want him to hopefully become a big star in this company, and I can face him again, and it's going to mean even more like down the line. If I sell for him here, it's going to mean more like when we're facing each other again for titles, whether it's tag team or singles, whatever.
Yeah, there's this Kawada cell, and there's another Kawada cell that's like he gets hit and like he acts like he's still in it or he's going to fire up, but then he just squats down.
That's right.
Yeah, yes, that's the other Kawada cell.
It's all in the face though, Ren. It's all in the face with Kawada. It's just like this dazed look in his face that him, I think the only other person who I think has such a unique way of selling that doesn't come off as cartoony that people imitate is Shinjiro Otani is another person who's a great seller. And people try to imitate his type of selling, but again, it doesn't always work because they're not able to master the timing and psychology of what him or Kawada are doing. Kawada comes out to throw Albright comes out to the ring to throw Kawada back in so he can finish him off. Kawada kicks out of a cover, but Albright goes for a full Nelson suplex, but Kawada fights it off, so Albright takes him over with a headlock. Then they go back and forth on the grounds with different submission attempts, and like, you know, these guys have already kind of started just beating each other up really badly, but they're still like going through these really fluid like attempts and escapes on one another. It's really beautiful to see something like this in All Japan in this era, Brandon.
Yeah, it's like fast mat wrestling, but between Gary Albright, who doesn't look like, you know, somebody who's going to do all this super quick mat wrestling and chain wrestling.
Kawada is able to hit the backdrop driver while he's in Albright's side headlock, and then he locks him in the stretch plum, which just gets this crowd fired up. I love this move. It's one of my favorite submission moves. Even though he rarely ever wins with this move, I just love how it looks, and it's one of my favorite moves to use in virtual pro wrestling too. When I'm playing,
it's one of my favorite moves to use in real life.
Oh no. I would never, you know, I'm not cruel enough or mean enough to actually put on the dreaded stretch plum on anyone in real life, Brandon. But in Virtual Pro Wrestling 2 or No Mercy for the N64, sure, why not?
Not in Ways Backyard.
Not in Ways Backyard, no. But unless someone asks, then I might accommodate them. But Albright is able to survive the stretch plum. He throws Kawada off of him. Kawada then tries for a power bomb. But Albright throws him over with a backdrop. They trade advantage on the ground until Albright captures Kawada's arm with a Kimura while he's on his back. It's really nice looking, early like, you know, MMA kind of style move here. This is great stuff and a very, you know, fresh style to be seeing in All Japan, you know, up until this time. You don't really see like guys walking in Kimura arm bars, like a chicken wing kind of style, while they're on their back is it's this is very like, wow, geez, like this is like a different from, you know, Baba's style from in this company.
The Dory Funk Jr. style of you know, mat wrestling and spinning tolls and stuff. And what we're seeing in the mid 90s now is the introduction of this more MMA style.
Yeah. Kawada is able to hang on long enough in this chicken wing Kimura to reach the ropes. Albright tries for another full Nelson suplex, but Kawada responds with a multitude of strikes and hits a rolling capo kick. Kawada goes for an armbar. Albright throws Kawada to the ground and goes for his own armbar, but Kawada rolls through and grabs Albright's arm and straightens out for very surprising quick tap out. And yeah. I loved it. This came out of nowhere, but it made so much sense.
Again, it's one of the few submission finishes in All Japan in the 90s that I can think of. I know there's a Misawa Gordy and maybe Misawa Saruta match that he wins with the face lock. I'm sure there's a couple matches that Kawada won with a stretch plum, but it's very few and far between. I'm sure there's a lot of them, but as far as memorable ones, there's very few. And this is not like the cross armbar was one of Kawada's signature moves.
No. This is very surprising, but it's like he, you know, like in previous attempts of trying for like an armbar, like a cross chest armbar, like they're, you know, they're never able to straighten out the arm. But as soon as he straightens out the arm, Albright pretty much immediately taps out. Like it's a, like it's an actual shoot fight. So this is like where his selling comes through in from UWF. It's like, okay, once you straighten out the arm, okay, like, cause there is actually, I, you know, I'm going to assume legit pressure being applied when you actually straighten out your opponent's arm in a professional wrestling match to the point where like, okay, I'm supposed to tap. I'm going to tap anyway, regardless, because this actually kind of hurts a little. So there is that. And then like this crowd goes nuts. They love it. They're like, oh, he won with an arm bar. Oh my God. Cause now it's proven that one of their favorites, one of the guys that they push as a top guy in this company, can hold his own in like a shoot style wrestling match. So I think it's something that I think if Baba really pushed it with Kawada in this sense, he would have had more confidence in him. And, you know, as being a guy who could be a champion when Masao is not the champion and not when Kobashi isn't ready yet, that he could have, I think he could have built the belt on Kawada sooner and more definitively and had a very nice run with him as champion, with like having quality matches, but also drawing like places like Budokan and other big stadiums across Japan.
Yeah, that's that he didn't is kind of what makes me like Kawada even more, in that he never really gets his due. He's sort of this tragic figure. And he didn't, all of his Triple Crown title reigns are very short, where they're interrupted by like broken arms or something. And even like the way that his career ended, just quietly, no retirement ceremony or retirement matches or anything. Always kind of overlooked and not fully utilized to his potential, I would say. Although he was like the number two or number three guy for a lot of those years there. And I think, you know, I can't think of like, what's the Misawa sell? What's the, you know, as important a figure as Misawa is, I think as like aesthetically, Kawada is to me the clearly the superior wrestler performer because of the range of emotions that he's able to use. This is something I used to try to teach, is that like, there's, you know, you can hammer really hard on the table and that doesn't really make music, but if you're able to use the subtlety and get that across and make all these different notes of music or of wrestling, that's where you can really, you know, fine tune and get strong reactions.
I mean, the only one who's close to him is, and I'd say equal to him but in a different way, is Kobashi. Because Kobashi's range of emotions really, I think, draws fans in like to his character. Whereas I think with Kawada, it's more towards his struggle in his matches, especially against like Misawa or Kobashi. But he's not like as beloved as Kobashi would become, because like Kobashi just has that innate fire and like sympathy that he gets when he's selling for his opponents. And whereas Kawada just makes everyone look good, I feel, but all while at the same time getting sympathy for himself, but he just makes everything look as good. And like into your point about Misawa's aesthetic, as far as like his cell, what is Misawa's cell? I think it's just like he's a very standard cell. But like, I mean, Misawa's just great in his own Misawa way that we don't really think about like that. But yeah, like, I Kawada, mean, it's very Kawada.
In terms of creativity, there's at least two Kawada cells that we talked about here. And I don't know if there's any Misawa cells. It's not to take away from Misawa, but to show, I guess, how great I think Kawada is.
Yes.
And I think, you know, if you just sat down, I don't know if I said this on the last time I was on, but if you just sat down and watched a Kawada match, you know, the first impressions are like, he's so stone-faced, or he's so stoic, or he doesn't express much. But that's a misleading first impression, a natural one, but a misleading one, because what you're really seeing there is like how low he can go with his emotions and his facial expressions ultimately gives him like a more granular way to express. Whereas if he came out, you know, like an American wrestler might, you know, screaming and yelling and everything, where is there to go from there? There isn't as much of a range of emotion to exploit in your match that way.
I think Misawa's the one who's always got the reputation of being stoic.
Yes, like, true.
Very few times, like, you'll actually see, like, him get fired up. But what he does, it's really nice to see. But, like, he is pretty much, like, this level, this volume throughout most of his matches.
And Misawa had other ways of doing it besides facial expressions, too.
Yeah.
Like, I think maybe it's in the 6394 match where, like, Kawada pulls him and starts giving him the knees or whatever. And Misawa just, like, he's bending over and just all of a sudden, boom, he stands right up. It shows that he's pissed in a way that's not necessarily all about the facial expression. You know, it's about other things in the body language.
It's true. We could go on for like another, I don't know, 17 minutes just talk about the cells of different guys in this company and how they're all great and they're all different in their own unique ways. This match is the other really noteworthy thing about this match for a semi-main event spot. In on a Budokan show, randomness is this match goes 15 minutes and 36 seconds. It doesn't even hit the 20-minute mark, and I love that. I like, I'm a person that, you know, I like the All Japan epics. I like that they go sometimes an hour, because there's something happening in all these like great matches that go an hour or 30 minutes. But I'm also someone who's like, you know what, if I can just watch something that's like less than 20 minutes and it's good, but then I'm all for that. This is less than 20 minutes. This thing is like, it's all killer, no filler, as far as I'm concerned, Ren. I don't know how you think about this match, but I love this match. I come out of this thinking, okay, I have a blind spot for Gary Albright. I'm going to change that. I'm going to start watching, go back. I've seen probably a lot of his matches, but I haven't necessarily gone back and rewatched them.
They have another match, these two.
Yes, they have another match.
Year.
So got to watch that. But also I want to watch a lot of what he does with Steve Williams in the Triangle Power Tag Team match, especially when they're at their peak where they're holding the World Tag Team titles for a period of time. So that's something I'm glad that you picked this match. I'm glad we got to talk about Gary Albright. And maybe some people listening to this go out. There's a lot of his stuff out there that you can just watch for free, either on YouTube or on Daily Motion, whether it's in All Japan or in the UWFI. And there's some actually great tribute videos that I was watching as well about Gary Albright out there on YouTube. So seek those out, people, if you can find them. They're very fun to watch, to see like just him in clip form, just hitting all these big moves on a variety of like superstars of Japanese professional wrestling in the 90s.
Yeah, and if I could hammer this point home, like I feel like this match is a great example of like how wrestling can be this sort of unintended collaborative effort, in that the conditions that made Gary Albright over in this situation, and the moves that were over in the situation was not totally up to Giant Baba or Kawada or Albright or Takada or whoever is in charge of UWFI. It's this total environment where you're dealing with conditions and the way that fans are educated and what they expect. That's, you know, there's competing forces here and different promoters that want different things, and everybody wants their business to be better than everybody else's. And you just have to sometimes, you know, make the best of those conditions. And this is an example of a match that I think really does a great job of that, in having this wrestler come in who does this different style. That's not natural to the style of the promotion that he's you know, having his first matches in here. They do of working to that rather than working against it. And I would say this style is like not just the style of the match, but the style of the presentation is really what I out of wrestling.
yeah.
Like things are not, they're not hitting you over the head with the drama, which makes it all the more effective to me. Everything from, you know, the way that Gary Albrecht gets in the ring, they do this stare down and the camera is on Albright sort of pacing around. And he's got these facial expressions that are intense, but they're not over the top. They're not hitting you over the head with goofiness. You know, I don't have to think, oh God, he's making like a stupid facial expression because he's a pro wrestler. Of course he's got to do this fake shit, but it's just enough to make me feel it and not enough to hit me over the head with a hammer. And the handshake that they do at the end, it's not like filled with all this gratuitous theater and drama. It's just like, it's, if this was a sporting event, that's how it's meaningful. And it's sort of another addition to the message that, look, Gary Albrecht's a real competitor here, even though he lost this match. Kawada shakes, he's acknowledging him. And there's not like this, oh, should I shake the hand or not? Or if we're going to turn after, you know,
right.
It's what I want out of wrestling. And, you know, I think the point of wrestling, when it does a good job for me as a viewer, it's not to make me believe as realistic as this style is. You got this amateur wrestler throwing great suplexes, and much of this match is super believable. That's kind of what the UWF style is striving for. But the point of great wrestling is not to make people think it's a shoot, but to make their immersion in what they're seeing as total as possible. And Almighty's in general does that for me. This match in particular, especially with the style of match that they're doing bell to bell, really accomplishes that.
Oh, for sure. I think you can say a lot of that probably comes from his background training with Fez, Robinson, and Hodge, and then working 5 years in a promotion that, you know, strive for realism and believability in its presentation. So Albright definitely like wants to carry that over here to All Japan Pro Wrestling. But yeah, that comes to the end of this show. Like, and Brandon, thank you so much. Definitely, I love your analysis of wrestling. And I think people who are only familiar with you talking about more the business end of wrestling will like want to have you come back on here in the future, talk more just analysis of a match. And then it's great. I'm so glad you're able to come back to do this show. And as of this recording, I will be seeing Brandon in person probably during the Forbidden Door weekend here in Toronto. And maybe we'll I didn't get to talk to you too much really in New York for that weekend for the post wrestling show or at the for the AW show, but hopefully we'll have a chance to sit down and talk a bit more in depthly face to face. I'm looking forward to that. And we're I mean, not that people don't know, but where can people find more of your work?
WrestleNomics.com. You'll find all the links there. Patreon.com/WrestleNomics. When you invited me to do this, you didn't mention the podcast. You asked me if I was going to be in Toronto. I thought we were going to do this in person. I thought we were going to have a long road in person at first.
Listen, we can pitch that to Wei and John. Like, we can do it at the post live show. You know, if people want, we'll do it as we're watching the match. Maybe we'll have to add another tickets tier to like just for people who want to watch that. Then, you know, because we got to get paid too for that. You know what I'm saying? I got to get my taste. You know what I'm saying? So, anyways. We'll be seeing each other, but yeah, definitely, you know, Brent is always doing stuff at WrestleNomics.com, at his Patreon site. Also, of course, here at PostWrestling.com, including like is it a weekly show you do with John, basically? The Pollock and Thursday?
Trying to be a weekly show. We'll see.
Because there's so much, I mean, like recently there's so much news that like you can't not go a week without talking to each other. I feel talking about what's happening in TV rights and AW and this and that Collision and Nikon doing something here and there. But I love it.
John and Wei do so much. I want to be careful not to put too much on his plate, but we'll see.
I think John loves it. Like I can hear in his voice when he's like doing a show with you. He's like, okay, I get to the nitty gritty and get really granular with these financials and stuff like that. So like, I always love when you guys talk together on Pollock and Thurston. I look forward to those, even though I'm not a huge fan of like necessarily the business side, but I find it fascinating. And I like hearing you guys talk about it. So go check that out anytime Brendan's doing anything, whether it's on his own or with John, or maybe sometimes like I want to see Wade come on do a financial show with you. Okay. You know, we got to get Wade to come on to do one of those things with you or something like that. Of course, you can find me here, Long and Winding Railroad. You can also find me usually monthly with John Pollock doing post Perez. And soon we'll be coming back with more Marvel Cinematic Universe content on MCU Later with me and Wei over at the cafe on the Patreon side of the site. So sign up for those. We're like, the fall is going to be crazy with Marvel content. So me and Wei got a lot of things to talk about. And occasionally I appear other places like Grapple and other places. So check me out whenever I show up there. But thank you to Brendan. Oh yeah, check out the Five Pillars t-shirt. Check out the Four Pillars t-shirt. We got all those up at the site at the store. They're I apparently am the best selling t-shirt content person on the site.
You had a great marketing campaign for that shirt.
You know. The first one, yes, I did. People just love these shirts, apparently. So, like, I appreciate all the support from everyone who's picked up a t-shirt and worn it, even if, you know, on television. That helps. That's nice. I appreciate that. But thank you very much for everyone for their support. Thank you, Brendan. We'll see each other in person soon. We'll have you back on the show, definitely, again. Maybe, you know, my challenge with you, nothing with Kawada in it. Try to pick someone else.
All right.
This time, because I know you love Kawada and I love Kawada too.
True.
But maybe as a change of pace, we'll try to pick someone, a match without Toshiaki Kawada.
That's a good challenge. And then
it's a good challenge. Maybe a Kira Taue singles match. You could try one of those.
That's an even better challenge.
Because I know you're probably not one of these people who doesn't appreciate the greatness of one dynamic T.
I appreciate Taue. I think I'm on the record as not being a Taue voter for the Observer Hall of Fame, though.
Okay. Well, we'll have to talk about that if we do a show about Taue. Okay. Anyways.
Perfect.
All right. Thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks to Brendan for being on the show. Check him out, WrestleNomics. Check me out on everything else I do here at Post Wrestling. And until the next time, I will say goodbye.